Good morning, everyone. My name is Sal Kovalevsky, and continuing with the travel around the U.S. through wine regions, we're going now to the Northeast in the Finger Lakes region, where it's not hot and dry, it's not hot and humid, but we're going to see how cold kills the grapes up there, and sometimes the grad students as well. So we're going to be talking about the deacclimation rate in cultivated and wild grape species. Jumping into the temperatures there, we have very low temperatures during the winter, and the grapes have a mechanism to cope with these low temperatures in which they have a depression of their intracellular freezing point, which beyond the melting point, so the ice actually forms at a lower temperature than it melts, and that is called supercooling, so grapes are super cool. That means that the pure water, if it was pure water, it could reach temperatures of minus 42 Celsius and still be in a liquid state. And this happens, we've seen up to around minus 35 Celsius inside grape cells. And this is not an increase in the concentration. This is purely a matter of the water molecules being able to organize themselves into ice crystals or not, and this is how it works. And the way we have to measure this so far is using the differential thermoanalysis from which we obtain the low temperature exotherm, or LTE, which is the temperature in which the ice starts forming inside the cells. So I'm briefly going to show you how this happens. First, the ice forms in the extracellular space, and this we call the high temperature exotherm, or HTE. Once the ice forms there, the water starts moving out of the cell into the extracellular space because of the difference in water potential, and this results in that cell drying because of that. And at some point, ice is going to form inside the cell, and that's when we have the LTE. And this happens through a dehydration to a critical point, and then perhaps there's spontaneous intracellular ice formation, or there's some sort of protein that helps with that. And there's confusion about whether ice crystals puncture the cell membrane and propagate throughout the bud, and we're trying to find an answer to the question. And it's 2015, and we haven't seen that happening yet. So one of the objectives of my research as a PhD student is trying to image that happening. So just to show you, this is what our DTA analysis looks like, and you have this first curve here is the high temperature exotherm, where most of the water freezes, and then here you can see that these buds were acclimating to a temperature around minus 26 Celsius. So we're trying to image, and we're using different techniques to see if we can find, we can visualize that ice forming and see exactly where it happened. And these are just some examples. We're trying laser microdissection. We're doing CT scan, and this is my recent personal favorite because I made a video out of it, and I think it looks really cool. And then we're trying to see inside, but of course in here we don't have enough resolution yet. There's X-ray phase contrast, which is a little bit different than the regular X-rays that you do in the hospital. We use a synchrotron source for that. And the cryo-SEM, which has recently showed most promising, where you can differentiate, where you have large ice crystals. You can see here the very crystalline structure. And in here, you don't really have that. So that one already had ice when we threw it into liquid nitrogen. So jumping into the experiment that we had, the dormancy is the suspension of visible growth of any plant structure containing a meristem. That's the definition. And basically, the tissues that actually cold acclimate in grapes are the endo and ecodormant, which are either imposed by the structure itself, and then the eco is the environmental conditions that impose this. And the eco dormant up there lasts a long while. As you can see in the picture, that was March 16th. And the year before that, I was harvesting blueberries in Florida at that time. So the objectives of my research were to determine the acclimation rate in different species with different dormancy states and different storage temperatures. So the material we used was vinifera cab sauv and Riesling, and we also used two wild species, which are Vitis amurensis and Vitis riparia from our repository up there. The endodormant material was collected in November of 2014, and the eco-dormant material was collected much later in March of 2015. The storage temperatures we used for the endodormant material was 4 degrees Celsius, and which is a regular fridge temperature, and 22 Celsius room temperature. And then for the eco-dormant material, we decided to have one that we changed from 4 to 22. It would spend a day in the 4 and then go inside the fridge for 24 hours and just going back and forth. And then establish the deacclimation rate, we didn't use growing degree days because it didn't grow. And the base temperature for grapes, the commonly used is 10 Celsius, but we had a storage temperature of 4, and we were seeing the acclimation, so we couldn't use 10 because then it wouldn't have a rate; it would just be a straight line up. So we used development degree days, and we changed the 10 to 0 Celsius. For the DTA analysis, the buds were collected daily to establish their low temperature exotherm. And for the endo material, we used 8 buds and we collected for 7 days. And for the eco-dormant material, we collected 5 buds each day, and that lasted for 10 days. And this is just showing a picture of what the bud looks like. Here we have the line where the cut happens, and this leaves what we call the bud cushion. And if we don't leave that, we don't see that LTE, so we believe that structure is important for the cold acclimation. So going on to the results, here's for the endodormant material. The dashed lines are the 22 Celsius material, and the straight lines are the 4 degrees Celsius. And you can see here that they're basically straight lines, and we did not see it wasn't deacclimating, except for when we did the analysis, the ANOVA was showing as if the 22 Celsius actually had a was significant. But when we looked at the estimate, it wasn't significantly different from 0, so there was no real deacclimation. Then when we looked at the eco-dormant material, it was a completely different story. And this here I'm just showing for Riesling. In green, you see the 22 Celsius. In red, you see the 422 regime. And in blue, you have the 4 Celsius. And here you're going to tell me that I said I only collected for 10 days, but that's like the period of time that we actually had enough material. And after that, we were just using less and less buds to establish this, just because we wanted to see how far we could go with it. And then we see that there's a really big difference between the 4 Celsius and the other temperatures. And this is looking with days for the deacclimation rate. And here, again, looking for all the species or the genotypes tested, we can see this is analyzing across cultivars and temperatures. We can see that for cab sauv, Riesling, and Riparia, the deacclimation rate was lower in the 4 Celsius compared to the other temperatures, while for amurensis, it wasn't different than the other temperatures. So this gives an idea that amurensis can de-acclimate faster at lower temperatures than those other genotypes analyzed. Then when looking at the development degree days, we can see that they're not as different as we were seeing them before. But you can still see that the 4 Celsius, which is the one in blue, deacclimates at a lower rate, even though you're using those development degree days. So it tells us that perhaps the machinery that does this deacclimation has an optimal temperature, and we have to establish what that temperature may be. Here, looking at the for all the genotypes analyzed, I didn't do the analysis, but just looking over these numbers, we can see, and I want you to look to the right for the riparian amurensis. We can see that the and these colors don't really mean that one is good or one is bad. It's just to show a difference in the intensity of the deacclimation, I guess. We can see that the riparia was actually deacclimating with a more per development degree day at a lower temperature than at higher temperatures, and we see that also in amurensis. But then if we look at this in a different way, and here I'm showing Riesling because that's how I was the cultivar I was showing before, we see that at 4 Celsius, you have a lower deacclimation rate than you get to the average temperature of 13, which was the 422, and you have 0.09, and then you get to 22 and you go back to 0.06. So we get the sort of structure that there is an optimal, but we have yet to include more temperatures in there to actually establish this. So in conclusion, the deacclimation rate varies with temperature and dormancy state, and the optimal temperature for deacclimation is dependent on species, as I mentioned, amurensis, and apparently riparia also have a lower temperature. Then the base temperature for amurensis appears to be lower than the other genotypes tested, because even when we were looking at the deacclimation per day, it was already deacclimating at a similar rate as the other temperatures, as it was in 4 degrees Celsius. So all these experiments are helping us understand how the deacclimation is going on, and especially how we can manipulate this in the lab so that we can do that imaging properly. And this is how we're trying to work in two fronts, trying to do this in the lab and manipulate them, and also trying to do the imaging, and at some point they're supposed to join, and I guess that's when I defend my thesis. But I have a long while to go. So I would like to thank my advisors, Dr. Jason Londo and Dr. Bruce Reich, and the Science Without Borders, who pays for my scholarship, Vitus Gen Project, which is an SCRI project, and the NSF and NIH, who are the where the imaging comes from. And thank you for your attention.
Just a comment. You talked about development degree days, and said you use those because there's not growth taking place. There is growth taking place in the bud. So just, I'm quibbling with your terminology, and if you said visible growth isn't taking place, it would be more accurate.
Okay. Thank you very much for that. It's a little complicated talking about what's going on in there, because we also see that this LTE level changes over the winter, and we don't exactly understand how that's going on in temperatures that are so low for such a long time. So we'll have to establish a new terminology for that.
Nice.
Thank you.